Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Thorburn.
So many better ways to pass the time.
Like what?
We're getting too personal. No, stop.
Yeah.
How else should she know about everything and send me all those Facebook message friend invite things?
Welcome to Polycast, episode 122. I am Sal, also known as Thorburn, and with us today is Dan Q.
There is nothing wrong with your ears. Do not attempt to modify the input. We are controlling conduction.
Dan apparently thinks he's on an episode of The Outer Limits.
Very good, very good.
I need more caffeine to deal with Dan.
Okay, next we have is Makalua.
Hi.
The Me and Team.
I did it for the lulz.
Phil does everything for the lulz and the trolls.
And UNL.
So sleep deprived that I'm imagining I'm on a polycast. Oh wait, I am.
We've talked about in Civilization 4, but it has some different aspects now in Civ 5.
Yes, the culture bombs. The thread started by old Davey, and he asks, perhaps I've missed something, but does anyone use their great artist for culture bombs in Civ 5? I've never had the need to use one. And that's a good question, because it's pretty rare. I mean, aside from the sheer annoyance factor of using it on somebody, certainly I can picture some scenarios in multiplayer would be kind of funny for the lulz, yes. But in terms of actual strong usage, it's hard to envision a scenario other than you're trying to deny people a strategic resource or something. The usage seems pretty rare. It's not like Civ 4 where a culture bomb also contributed to a culture win. So you might want to consider the tile improvement for culture or an alternative use instead of that. Or if there's some tiles you really need, well, you can consider it.
Or if there's some tiles you really want to be a butthead and take away from the AI.
Yes.
Why are you being a butthead if you take it away from the AI? It's not like they have feelings.
Well, true, but, you know, you're still trolling.
City. You know, you're going to piss the AI off if you culture bomb it considerably. The game built in fairly significant diplo repercussions for doing it. So if you're going to take that hit anyway, screw them over. Take the military.
Oops, I just took away your uranium. No nuclear bombs for you.
And if you can deny them a resource that actually cuts their military strength, I can see it then too. Like, say they only have 6 iron and you flip away 6 iron. Their iron units are worthless now. On most levels, I can't picture that happening frequently, but if it's there, you can do it, I guess. I'd like to see the choice on this particular feature be a little more dynamic.
Yes, the AI can be your Beavis to your butthead. But what you can do... another cultural reference, there you go. cultural, maybe loosely cultural.
Yeah, that was loosely defined.
They are loose.
I'm just showing my age. Phil mentioned what else you could do with the great artist. The unique tile improvement, which is the landmark, which is +5 culture. With a great artist, now I'm thinking what's it for. I mean, giving yourself one of those instant golden ages. I mean, yes, it can depend on when it is in the game and how many turns it's going to be. But early on in the game, I might be tempted, if I had a great artist early on, to actually be going for the landmark, because that +5 culture earlier on in the game is going to be of more significance to you than it is later on. But as far as actually using it for the culture bomb purpose, some people mentioned in the thread, you know, if you're right up against some tiles with the AI that you either want to to take, or you think it's going to be difficult for you to get because it's kind of an awkward square and you're trying to keep a contiguous border either to a city that you founded, one of your puppet states, or maybe an allied state that you are friends or an allied state, a city state that you are friends or allied with to help you keep that. I don't imagine in the thread mentions about just getting that extra tile. So if they have got like a Great Wall, for example, and you want to be able to attack without having that that penalty for that extra turn or whatever, that there's also that beneficial status. I know I can count on one hand the number of times I've used a culture bomb. And the first time was, oh, let's see what this actually does. And then the second time, well, yeah, it was to be a butthead. But it's really just, it is very, very situational. And I think, generally speaking, rank of importance, like earlier pushing into mid-game, maybe the landmark, then, you know, mid-ish to later game. Perhaps you're looking more at doing the golden age. And then perhaps, you know, later on in the game, when very situational, perhaps you can find use for the culture bomb.
I rarely ever get the artist, it seems, for my great people. And when I do, I think I usually do go with the landmark. So, but yeah, like you said, it can be situational. I can see where it could be useful, like you said, stealing the tiles or stealing the resources and stuff, but...
Yeah, that's worth pointing out. You do have some control over the great people you get, typically. And you might want to consider an alternative great person over an artist. It's not like the old patch. I don't know about an old patch, but at one point it was possible to get multiple great people at once just by making sure your bar filled at the same time. But I think that's been patched out. So, yeah, it's costly to get an artist over an alternative great person, certainly. If you're talking about a buffed manufactory, or you know, maybe a great scientist bulb, where you pick your tech, which can be very powerful, you know, you're giving one of those things up when you're getting a great artist. So you need to make that great artist count.
But if you're like me, sometimes you're not really paying attention to your great people. It's like, oh, I have an artist.
Yeah, but for me, the artists or the wonders I usually build don't give the artists. I usually get maybe like engineers or merchants. The ones that I probably might go to wonders. So, yeah, that's why I pretty much rarely get artists. And plus, I usually don't make it much further than Middle Ages or before my game starts crashing.
Now, Randall Turner in this thread, who is a big opponent for the culture bomb usage in Civ 5, talks about his experience is that you can expand indefinitely. And to that extent, he means, of course, that the initial culture bomb hex that you get in that first turn may not be the full extent, of course, to what you're getting. That you're getting some additional hexes later on. But still, unless maybe as a longer term strategy, maybe, but it just doesn't have the same oomph that it had in Civilization 4. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm not saying we should go back to Civ 4. I'm just saying that the treatment of great artists in Civ 5, when it comes to the culture bomb, that's kind of like, again, a very situational and generally speaking, probably my last thought. Okay, could I use it for a landmark? What about a golden age? We're right. There's also the culture bomb.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but like I said, I never use it that much, or I don't think I've ever used it in Civ 5, but it doesn't flip cities, right? All it does is might encompass their city with your culture, but their city is still their city.
I believe that's true, and it's not like in Civ 4 where you can, unless I'm mistaken, I just haven't been paying close attention, like in Civ 4 with the culture, you could have that particular tile, and then you could lose that tile outside of any great culture if that's the city beside you suddenly started pushing up their cultural output with their cultural buildings or some certain wonders, which we won't go into. But in Civ 5, it's not like that. That tile is yours so long as you still have that city, and you're not collecting. So in that respect, I can see that actually in that very minor slice, there's that desirability for a great artist. But even then, still, it's so situational. And as I think was pointed out in the thread, it's more of a tactic, I'd say, for a less... let me make an argument for anything except like a militaristic effort, like someone who's not actually trying to win by domination. There can be times where... Yeah, you want to deny this resource to that civ, as had been said, because they're pretty darn powerful, and I'd like to have it instead of them. If you're going for domination, or even if you're not going for domination, you decided, I'm just going to wipe this civ out. Well, you just build up and go in and take it. Forget about using the great artist for that.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder what the function of the, you know, culture bomb really is. If I don't know if anybody else finds it weird that, you know, you guys have, we have some sort of culture bomb that doesn't add anything to your total culture in terms of social policies. But at the same time, it's like, it's necessary to, I don't know, nerf that because, I mean, you can't have people, like, doing great artist bombs and getting a culture weighted within, like, 50 turns or something. But, I don't know, it just seems really weird to me that you can, like, put a great artist in the tile and suddenly all those tiles are yours, but you don't have any extra culture and it's supposed to be a culture bomb. It just feels like it's just gratuitous taking up land by an artist.
You got served.
Yeah, Marduk 80 in the thread actually talks about there should be an option to use a great artist to gain culture towards social policies. And to just touch on briefly again, because it just can't help it, the upcoming patch where social policies, that could actually be more desirable. But until that option is added, or if that option is added, maybe there's a mod out there, but you know, that's for another show.
Yeah, until then, your landmark's your best bet for getting culture towards social policies, and probably in general, to be honest.
The problem is that they can be pillaged.
Yeah, but you can repair them.
Yes, they can be repaired.
In Civ 4, you had to rebuild the improvement. So if you had your cottage or your town pillaged down to a cottage, it would take really long to grow back. But yeah, in Civ 5, repair is pretty quick, and it takes less time than the original improvement would normally. Although with the great improvements, obviously, it's going to take a little bit more time just because that improvement was instant beyond the cost of farming the great person anyway.
Yeah.
But one should really try to deny pillaging of their land if possible. Pro tip.
You think?
Personally, I think I'd rather pillage than to culture bomb, because you get money when you pillage.
There you go.
Yeah, and with your ability to buy right from the outset and just the power of money in this game, those are shinies worth having.
So, I hear you guys like patches. Paraxis is going to put another patch in your Civ 5?
No.
Oh.
Yes, but no.
This will be a fun topic to discuss. This thing is quite lengthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello, 3 or 4 pages of patch notes.
Well, you're saying you're not going to read them all to us?
Don't you have a top 10 list?
That's Dan's job.
Would you say that?
I think we should put a poll up.
Yes, absolutely.
You're just trying to bait Dan into it.
My line item with these polls and discuss their merits.
We have a thread that has a poll and a top 10 list in it. Oh my gosh.
Have you a poll about which top 10 list would be the best to use?
Oh, yeah. But anyway.
Let's not go down that convoluted path. Let's talk about things.
A preface here. I know why they're releasing the patch notes now, in part. They're trying to, letting people know that this is what we're doing. This is what's coming up. But it is such a substantial patch that sometimes ignorance is bliss, in the sense that I really don't want to play Civilization V right now until you release this patch. Honestly,
it's like being in between formats, you know, like being in between VHS and DVD, and you're like, I don't have a DVD player, but I'm not going to use these VHS anymore. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a digression.
Yeah, but it's true. And then you start reading in the patch notes, and it's like, I'm sorry, is this still the same Civ 5? What?
No. And another thing to this as well is, when we were talking about previous Civ games, when it came to a patch, you had a choice. Now, yes, there could be consequences for not going to the latest patch, such as if you wanted to play with someone else who was running the latest patch, so sad, too bad for you. But honestly, with these substantial changes, it almost seems like this is Civilization 5.5 or something. And, I don't know, it would be nice that even after this is released, to still... It's so substantial, it's kind of like, this is the new Civilization 5. whether this is what they were originally intending all along, and they couldn't get there for whatever reason, and now they're going to get there, or whatever it happens to be. It almost seems like you could play Civilization V as it is today, and you could also play this game, and it would be a completely different experience. And so I suppose in some respects, if you've never played Civilization V before, it really doesn't matter. Because a lot of the tips and the strategies that we have been talking about before, it's going to go into the frickin' history books. Because there is so many things that are different. The head spins.
Yeah, so let me just get this straight. So for being like the good, assiduous, Civilization fans that we are, and having bought the game when it actually came out, you know, you're going to get the complete game only a year later when it's like $20 cheaper, and you actually learn everything about the game already, being the, you know, faithful server that you are. Like, what were we supposed to do? Like, not play the game for like a year after it comes out to wait for, like, I don't know, people.
Now, wait a minute here. You're not going to imply that the game is going to be a complete game after the patch, are you?
Oh, I'm thinking at least. Sorry, I was sorry. I'm very sorry.
Some of these patch notes are just eyebrow raisers. It's like, you look at it and you start wondering, how is this possibly going to fit in the game in a balanced fashion? I'm pushing Jin on because he has so much more experience at the high levels, and there are a couple things he mentioned that were just game-breaking, potentially. But I think anybody who's played the game at least a little bit could look at through some of these and see some things that raise eyebrows, at least. Now, certainly I'm glad that they're making an effort to improve the game. Don't get me wrong about that, but yeah, this really is kind of a dead times because the patch changes are so drastic.
Well, the things that I'm definitely looking forward to with it, there are some things, like a lot of the balance and stuff that they dealt with there, the different values and stuff, it's really going to be a wait and see to see how it really affects the game. Some things like the research agreements, I'm holding off on judging on that because, I mean, I kind of like the way it is right now, but I'm not certain with, I mean, this change may be better for gameplay, although, I mean, I like getting that tech instantly myself, so.
Yeah, I think I'm actually trying to address such a substantial patch as this. It's kind of like, where do you start talking about things? What is a starting point? And the fact we could also argue about how maybe some of these things should have been more incremental. Let's do this first. See how that plays out, because there's a lot of discussion and people are trying to take into account how this has changed gameplay, but there's so many things that have changed gameplay. It's one thing to do something. In other words, we know about quantity X, quantity Y is going to change, but there's so many things that have changing. It's we're trying to compare things that we have no experience with in terms of actually playing right now. But you mentioned research agreements, so why don't we talk about that? Because I think that is a big, big deal. I mean, for on any difficulty level, but I think even on the higher difficulty levels where research agreements were so critical to, you know, not dying and stinking up your game. So instead of, like you said, instead of research agreements, after 25 turns, each of you gets a free technology that you don't already have. Research agreements now give a tech boost. So tech boost starts at 50% of the median value of all techs you can research. Can be boosted to 100% if you both start rationalism, social policy, and build the porcelain tower world wonder. Well, okay, so tech boost started 50% of the median value that you can research. First thing that says to me is backfill is more, even more important now in that respect. But until I actually see it playing out, am I going to want to be investing money in research agreements? In other words, are they going to cost more or less the same as they do right now? It seems to be implied, right? Because these are patch notes, things that are changing, not to confirm things that haven't changed. So, I don't know. I think that they may still have value, but they don't think that... I'm pretty sure that they're not going to be as strong as they were, even if you manipulate it, even if you do this rationalism and the porcelain tower and take into some of these other considerations as well. I think it's a good thing that it maybe is not as overpowered as it was going to be, but perhaps we did a little bit too much nerfing. I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see once it's actually released, but it just strikes me as, you know, we needed a chisel and we took a sledgehammer.
I don't know. I think that's a good change for the game, potentially. It's certainly divergent from previous Civ games, but as far as I'm concerned, tech trading has been a serious and painful problem on the franchise since Civilization III. And it's just ridiculous how strong tech trading and then research agreements were. Even in Civ 4, you look at that, you can build every tile, you can build every city improvement you have available in the early game in every city you own, get a 50% bonus to your science, or you can trade well and get a 200% bonus to your science with building no infrastructure at all. Trading well makes that much difference. And why should one aspect of gameplay strategy be so overpowering and luck-based, mind you, because you may or may not be able to make good trades on that game, just depending on the Diplo situation. You know, why would you make such an overpowering mechanic and make it dependent on luck? I really like the fundamental reasoning behind a nerfing of the research agreements a lot. Now, have they overdone it? We don't know yet, but certainly I think it needed a sledgehammer and then some, because it's just way too strong as a mechanic. And it bothered me. It certainly bothered me in Civ 4 and 5.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's just a matter of seeing how it affects the gameplay. I mean, the patch after this could change it back again or change it in a different direction. So if this doesn't turn out too well, so this is basically a wait and see.
There are a lot of changes here. Some interesting ones, the diplomacy, the backstab's more transparent. One of the things I read under the Diplo changes is that the AI is more likely to try in the game now, which I like. One of my long-standing hates over the AI is that some of them just don't try to win the game. And with in some patch notes regarding grand strategy, as well as some patch notes that say that they're going to expand better in the early game, that's promising to me. Now, my optimism is very guarded, especially after seeing the debacle that is some of the late Civ 4 patches and some of the earlier Civ 5 patches. But it certainly gives cause for optimism, because we're looking at AIs that are probably at least going to take advantage of the bonuses they do have a little better, and not be so one-sided with some AIs becoming super AIs and some AIs doing literally nothing all game. I would like to see Civs all actually have a chance to win the game. So hopefully they will get something along those lines, or at least closer.
Yeah, and I think, again, with especially with the diplomacy and the AI, I have to take a wait-and-see stance, because, I mean, yeah. How many times have we been promised, like, oh, yeah, with this next game or this next patch, and not even just in Civilization, but in, I guess in games in general, yeah, with this next game or next patch, oh, the AI is much, much better than you've ever seen before, and then when you get the game and you start playing it, it's maybe not any... Sometimes it's even worse than previous versions. Whenever the developers start talking about, yeah, we've improved this and improved the AI and everything, the proof is in the pudding, as they say.
Yeah.
Or whatever your favorite, preferred choice of dessert is.
Other than the research agreements, when it comes to balance mechanics, it's big, 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 big. I think even bigger than that, because it has impacts across so many aspects of the game, is happiness.
Yes.
What's done with happiness in the game? Let's just, we'll start with this sentence, and we can go from there. Unhappiness per city increased to 3 from 2. You think, okay, I know happiness has been an issue. Okay, in and of itself, it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But then you start looking at some of the other things, such as reduced happiness from luxury resources and certain social policies that reduced unhappiness, particularly when you're talking about either cities that are not garrisoned that you don't have a unit in, or cities that were part of your puppet as puppet cities as opposed to being annexed, that they just haven't been minimized, nerfed themselves. They have been removed. And it's like, whoa, this is, you know, I understand we're trying to help with the Tall Empire and help with the victory conditions other than domination, but it's kind of like, could we not have helped that without doing quite so much with the nerf bat here on the...
Well, wait a second, though. You gotta note that, you know, the happiness benefit from building a lot of wonders has actually increased. So, like, Chichen Itza, okay, come on, you're not building Chichen Itza, but you might build it now that you know that it's going to, you know, give you an extra 4 happiness. And Notre Dame gives 10 happiness up from 5. That's significant.
You also have a very big line early in the balance mechanics change, reduced per city policy costs by 50%. And although some of the policies pulled the happiness, there have been other policies added back, or reworked or just changed such that you can get happiness from them or more happiness from them. For example, the ludicrous 0.5 happiness per connected city to the capital from meritocracy has been moved back to 1 per city, and because of that, their rounding nonsense is no longer an issue. But that's certainly something that offsets the happiness. And with the faster social policies for any empire that actually expands by reducing the social policy costs like that, it almost seems like they want you to get more of your happiness from there. I don't know, because the buildings keep taking nerfs. So I'm not sure. Like, it's hard for me to put it all in a picture for in my head without making a spreadsheet or something I don't ordinarily do to see if there's more or less global happiness available and the timing of that happiness, which will make a big impact on the gameplay. Now, at the start, they said that we should expect some changes to the pacing of the gameplay and that it's going to be harder. I don't trust Firaxis as far as I can throw Firaxis, which as a corporate entity is impossible to do. In other words, I don't trust Firaxis at all here in terms of whether it's actually going to be harder or easier. Not one bit. With this many changes, I think it's going to be rather hard to predict how the community adapts and sees the game. But it's something interesting. Certainly some of the features added I just like conceptually. Certainly the policy finishers, for example. I don't know that they need to completely overhaul the tree, but if they felt they did, okay. The finishers are a good concept regardless, because it gives you another layer of strategy in taking your social policies. If you want to jump around to the good ones, or if you want to go for those finishers, so to speak.
Well, I acknowledge that the social policies are going to be easier to come by, and that, yes, they've introduced happiness into other areas. The Wonders argument, I'm just like, oh, like that's in a particular game. One civilization's going to get that, and that's going to be the end of it. And I know that, yes, the puppet empires, you could get really freaking ridiculous with it, especially with also some of the social policies as they were. Oh, look at my unhappiness. Oh, let's go to theocracy. Hello, 27 happiness in a single boom. Yeah, okay, that was extreme. I'd like to see that it's still, I don't know, it's not so much of a viable option. I mean, it still is possible. But just to make it maybe not as desirable in the sense of this is particularly overpowered as compared to some other options, it just seems that, to me, to some extent when it comes to the happiness, they went a little too far in some respects to force me to have to choose what I want, and also to see some of the consequences, to have to choose a little earlier. I'm worried about the ability to adapt depending upon game circumstances, but we'll see. We'll see. And again, I'm not completely harping on the unhappiness issue. I think changes did need to be made, and I'm happy in some respects. But overall, I'm cautiously concerned at this point on the happiness issue.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm of the style. I like to play the big maps, the expanded empires and stuff. I think as many civilizations in the world as I can fit on there. And that's one of the things I like to do. And now it's like it seems like they're trying to control you and force you into playing these smaller empires, like you said, the tall empires, which I'm not really too happy about that. And just like I said, that goes against my style. They do have, it seems like, a lot of counters with the new rework policies. And on the policies note, I'm also intrigued by a lot of the changes that they have made, but also I am kind of worried with that. And the fact that, how is that going to affect cultural victories? With like adding an extra tier, the finishers, and then, how is that going to affect your cultural victories? The changes, how much culture you can get toward those policies and the cost of the policies and whatnot.
It looks like you can get away with having more cities and still getting a culture win just by glancing over the changes. And again, the policies, they're different enough that it's hard to judge right now. For example, that unhappiness per city going from 2 to 3 is cut completely by meritocracy. But what if you get military caste on top of that? Then you're down to 1 unhappiness per city. And you get some weird things, like organized religion giving you stuff for monuments, temples, monasteries. What's this negative 50% unhappiness per specialist on democracy with freedom? Really? Negative 50% unhappiness? Instead of just, I guess that.
Yeah,
that's
they said that a couple of times here about the whole weird wording about the negative 10% unhappiness. Like
but
Forbidden
Palace,
for example.
You can cut your unhappiness by running specialists, essentially. And specialists can be pretty powerful. So, again, there's a lot of ways to manage your happiness still.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you can have an empire spanning the entire world if you get your policies set together correctly and have enough to build the building. But it is a little annoying that some of the buildings are less effective now, and it's going to be an adjustment process for certain.
Well, I think my biggest problem with commerce since they released the game is the fact that they combine Navy and the money making policies into one thing. So you kind of got shorted on both of those where, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's part of it is because I'm a little biased. I'm a former Navy sailor and I want more to do with the Navy side. And of course, it would have been nice to have five that are particularly strictly or five policies that are strictly geared toward the money as opposed to splitting it in between these two. I think that to me, I think that's the problem with the commerce and why that's not as up to par as some of the other policy branches.
Now, some of the policy finishers, you kind of roll your eyes and say, really, at that point, is that really going to, help you that much? Then some other ones are like, ooh, they're like, this is a good idea. Move some of the, you finish this part of the branch in the particular social policy, they move that to the end, or in some cases, they even move one benefit from one social policy tree to the other. It really is a lot of changes, and I think a lot of the changes in the social policies themselves are actually quite good. Hopefully it plays out as well in balance as it looks like it's going to.
Also, they changed the tech tree considerably, just not only with prerequisites, but also late-game costs.
Yeah. I mean, I like to see some cheaper costs. Like, I'd say, like, I don't know, with the technologies, it seems like the earlier part, like the classical, is like you get into the classical and then you're done with it within a few turns. Or I guess depending on how long you're playing, if you're playing like a standard. I mean, this seems like it just, you pass by the classical age in a blink of an eye, whereas you have these other parts like medieval and renaissance, which like, seem to take forever to get through. So I'm curious to see how the balance that they've done with the technology is going to work.
Yeah. Also, long swordsmen are nerfed, certainly, as were fighters, bombers, guided missiles, jet fighters. So...
Yeah, those in and of itself I'm not upset about.
Longswords are no longer the dominant medieval force they once were. Also, all defensive city improvements were nerfed in terms of strength, so now city strength will not be as high. That's probably to compensate the longsword nerf to some extent, but we might see the return of the forest unit to some extent because of this, which is nice. And I really don't like those people who just pour defenses all the time and... don't build a lot of units and expect to be able to defend themselves. So any nerf to a city's defense is welcome. I would like to see legitimate military tactics matter more than cities that outrange siege for 3/4 of the game. So whatever. Okay, maybe 2/3, but still. I mean, artillery is a long way to wait until you can outrange cities unless you want to farm promotions, in which case you can get archers outranging cities, which is no less ridiculous than cannons not being able to outrange cities. So, whatever.
On those defensive buildings, yes, their defensive value has been lessened, but if you're assigned to a social policy, or if you were to go to honor than professional army, you'll get +1 happiness per defensive building.
Yes, that's true. Honor has a lot of happiness in it now. That's really interesting. For somebody who loved honor before, this is really odd that they would throw this much happiness in honor. You also get another happiness for a garrison unit through military tasks. So now if you go through the entire honor tree, you can get a lot of happiness per city that you couldn't have before. Not to mention you get culture for unit garrisons. They really
get
the culture.
If you get to the finisher, you get gold for all the units you kill.
Yes. Farm the AI to craziness. Yeah, this stuff here is why I'm not as pessimistic about the changes to the happiness mechanic. You can get more culture, and it seems like you get your social policies faster now, which might be all right, depending. It's just so hard to look at such a blanket change list and say, okay, this is how this is all going to affect balance, big picture-wise. You can look at any one feature and see that the change is pretty big, but putting it all together is another issue entirely.
some of the things in the patch notes that are just kind of like, it's a good thing, or maybe it's a bad thing, but it's pretty minimal. Or some things are actually, you know, kind of humorous.
Civilpedia is now available in the main menu, which I know it was in Civ 4. I think it was in the other Civs, where it was something you could access from the main menu from the previous versions as well. Is that a key feature? Is that something that's really important or whatever? No, but it's nice to be able to like, browse through the Civilpedia without actually going into a game or and whatnot.
That's great. I don't have to start a game of Civ 5 anymore just to go inside and look at the Civilpedia.
And then, of course, the thing that I think should have never been dropped out, why it was not, you know, to begin with, the replays, they're finally putting them back in. To me, that was the big bang when you got to the end of the game, whether you won or lost, being able to watch, you know, the whole replay of the map with your borders expanding and shrinking and everything that's going on. That was like your payoff, for playing so many hours into this game. You have to see it played out in front of you. In summary, and that's one of the things I've always looked forward to in every previous Civilization game that I've remember it being in. I know it was in 4, I'm pretty certain it was in 3 and 2. And
it was in 3, yeah.
Yeah, it may not be an essential gameplay element, but it's, like I said, it's the reward for playing through it all. When you get to the end and, okay, you won, goodbye. I mean, you just kind of feel like, okay, now what?
There were actually a few things that were just added the day before this recording. The patch notes were updated ever so slightly. My favorite from that is under user interface, remove dead players from demographics you buy. Thank you. It's like, who's going to get picked on next or who should I pick on? I should pick on the dead guy. Well, that's great. Yes, of course the values are going to be zero and worse. Actually, it was actually even more humorous when, particularly when it came to approval rate and the civilization was destroyed. The best, you saw they were still the best in terms of approval rate. It's like, wait, what?
Can't we have some hotkeys under the UI thing? Seriously? Then make UI changes and not give us hotkeys still? Ugh. I mean, there's some for like worker improvements, but I'm getting really tired of doing double to triple the amount of clicking and button pressing just to do the same thing that a previous game could do in fewer presses. Not that even Civ 4 was good. Civ 4's user interface is bad too. I would love to see changes in that core gameplay mechanic.
I'll second that. Have some default hotkeys, but also have the ability, if you wanted to customize those commands as well.
Yes, that would be excellent. It can't be that hard to program. Compared to programming an AI, or messing with spawn locations, or completely reworking the game, it's like Firaxis has made a consistent effort at avoiding making a solid controls in their game at all costs for like a decade. It's really frustrating to me. Especially coming from an RTS background where the controls actually are good. It's nasty.
Kind of a quirky thing. Block city-states from building carriers and atomic weapons.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good thing.
No more pissed off city states with nukes.
I haven't really gotten that far, so did they ever, if they built it, did they ever actually use the nuke?
I'm sure it would have, you got into war with it. Now, there's one thing that's notably missing, and quite frustratingly missing from the patch notes almost entirely, and that's a multiplayer patch. I didn't see any patch notes saying that multiplayer works now, and there isn't any, and it certainly doesn't. I don't even see a hotfix for the production thing, and where you can't end your turn because it keeps prompting you to choose production, even though you already did. Now, let alone the double moving issue that you know we've been talking about, or at least I've been talking about, since pretty close to release, where you can hit end turn and then not be able to do anything, even though other people have an ended turn. So you're just double moving bait unless you wait to the end of the turn. And that kind of stuff is inexcusable in leaving the game. And it's hard to play with just more than 4 players. And the only patch notes we get for multiplayer is that the multiplayer AI now plays like a single player AI. And that hot seat is available. Are you kidding me? It's been almost a year since the game is out, and one of your core features isn't working yet. Oh my god, that one really... If there's one bad thing about this patch, it's that they barely touched multiplayer at all. I would say that the effort there is really underwhelming.
Well, they did put a hot seat in, so...
Yes, that they did. That's nice. That's something that most would argue should have been in the game from before the game was even released. It should have been a beta feature. But even if that wasn't, I don't know. It seems like such a small amount of effort for a gameplay aspect that's been broken for, you know, almost a year now.
I don't know if I'm kind of defending them or not, but I guess the argument is that if they're going to fix the game, they got to get the single-player game under control first and working properly before they can really tackle multiplayer, but I don't know. I mean, that's just...
It may have been their thought process on it, but yeah. For all of us that play a lot of multiplayer, this is just like, what?
And we're not asking for like perfect balance between each.
No, we're asking to be able to play a game and finish it without it crashing and have more than three humans in a game.
Yes.
Is that much to
ask? It's basic functionality we're talking about here, not refined gameplay aspects. This isn't a balance thread in StarCraft II or something. We can't play the game because it doesn't work. That's critical.
I mean, I don't play as much multiplayer. I think the one time I did was shortly when I got played with you guys, and it was okay. I haven't really played it since, so I don't know what all the problems are. I haven't really experienced them all.
Well, I understand, like, if you're not really, like, a, you know, multiplayer regular person, you know, it wouldn't matter to you. But at the same time, you know, the principle of the multiplayer not working, I don't know, in this day and age, just seems unthinkable. I mean, in this age of games, how about that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if they're trying to make Civ World their multiplayer experience, and this, like, a single-player experience. If they are trying to do that, then Civ World ain't cutting it. that's to come.
Another elephant just came in the room. But
wow, it's getting crowded in here.
we got the pink elephant and the blue elephant. We'll try to get the green one in here shortly.
Pink elephants are on parade.
When it comes to the multiplayer aspect, I'm a little resigned to the fact that this is not addressing multiplayer, in part because it has been promised that multiplayer will be addressed in the future, the issues with it. I, myself, in terms of this patch, I think it would have been better not to include Hot Seat, not to add Hot Seat until after the issues had been addressed with multiplayer that already existed. Because it's like you took the effort, yes, to dive into multiplayer, but you used it to add a new feature as opposed to addressing what is already in the game and is problematic. That's kind of the issue I have with the multiplayer in it, that it's not that multiplayer was included ever so, even though it was very little, not so much that, but because of what it is that they added rather than trying to sit again, address some of the concerns. But
well, I think with the thing with Hot Seat is it's not, I'm thinking it probably doesn't play the same as like your online multiplayer, because I mean, you're going turn by turn instead of like when you're playing online, everybody's taking the turn at the same time. I think the mechanics are slightly different with the, when you're talking about the Hot Seat. It's almost more like a single player game. It's just, you may have humans playing certain, like a number of different civs or whatever.
Well, yeah, because you don't have the simultaneous turn aspects, which is really the primary reason multiplayer is broken, besides the connectivity and netcode. And yes, Hot Seat does bypass all that. You're essentially running single-player rotating turn instead of dealing with the other issues, which are a nightmare.
The desire for Hot Seat, I can't believe, is to anywhere near the extent that it is multiplayer that's actually over LAN or more likely over the internet. Yeah, and when you have such a substantial patch like this, given, again, to what it does to the human player in the approach, you wonder about the balance when it comes to the AI as well. The fact, you know, that we've got Civilization 5 and it's from Steam and it automatically pushes those updates to you, you know, when you connect to the Steam server. To me, it makes like the incremental changes even more desirable, and you can get to that point of adjustments like, okay, social policies, this is the focus on the social policies. Whoa, massive changes. All right, let's adapt to that. Happiness changes, massive. Okay, let's adapt to that. And it doesn't mean that they have to be, you know, months and months and months apart. But when all of these things are coming together and you're trying to balance all of that, when you're trying to address existing issues and then perhaps you introduce new balance issues when something is so substantial, it is a little concerning and it feels overwhelming. But maybe it'll have a completely natural flow. I'm hoping that and I think right now, especially if you read a lot of the discussion, a lot of the analysis, you can give yourself a migraine. So, you know, trying to say, okay, yes, this makes sense. Oh, that doesn't make sense. I agree with that person. Oh, this person says that. Oh, now I disagree. maybe it'll just all flow together. Maybe it will be fine for new Civ players alike, those who have been playing Civ 5. I certainly think that what is good about such a substantial patch, however, is that even if you're finding yourself not agreeing with some of the changes, or maybe even any of the changes, and a lot of people have been saying, oh, this has been taken from X mod, this has been taken from X mod, bad, 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 bad. No, not bad. I mean, you know that they are engaging in the community. They're seeing what's being done out there. They're taking into account what people are saying about certain things, and they're trying. They're trying to respond, and they're saying, okay, you think this is a good plan. We've looked into it. We agree. Now it's in the patch. Now let us see how it works in the game proper. So that in and of itself is a good thing.
Yeah, it's like a beta change. Wait a minute,
did we just reverse good cop roles here? What's that?
No, I think they needed to make a fairly large amount of change. I disagreed that you need to do it incrementally, or that perhaps incrementally is necessarily preferred. When I look at these changes, it would be difficult to just patch happiness because of how they're reworking the social policies. It would be really hard to do that without making a change to the other. And then if you're going to change those two things, now the relative value of the wonders change. And you have to look at that, or else it's going to be obvious that some wonders are too strong. And it's the same thing with the buildings too. And when you change the relative value of one of the mechanics to a large extent like this, it's going to affect your trade-off decision-making between that mechanic and other mechanics in the game. So you have to at least make some changes to mitigate that when you're making a patch. And this is ambitious, and it certainly can flop, but I think it's the right idea, because the game really did need an overhaul.
I'll meet you halfway in the sense that, yes, I agree. I think I used too extreme of an example of just addressing happiness in this patch, or just addressing social policies in that patch. I just think perhaps it might just be a little bit too much of a good thing, the good thing being trying to address so much at once. If some of this had been a little bit more incremental rather than one big fell swoop, I think it wouldn't be quite as disorienting to people who have already played the game. And for the number of people who have already, you know, given up on the game, either, you know, like an extended period of time now or for good, they're done with these changes and the issues that came up. I wonder if some people are just going to look at this and go, oh my gosh, there's so much different. Maybe I like some of the things, but I'm not saying that you shouldn't have to adapt. I mean, I adapted when, in an earlier patch, they gave the nerf to horsemen. And then long swordsman became the new horseman, question mark, or period, depending upon your view. And maybe that's going to change now. That in and of itself isn't an issue. It just feels so overwhelming, all of these changes, that it at least gives the perception it's not, again, not so much that you don't have other options, or that other options aren't as desirable, if not more desirable. It just seems to be, depending upon your play, it's, you know, everything you thought before, or a lot of the things you thought before, are not so, and you must change this if you expect to do as well as you have been doing, if you get my meaning.
Going back to what you said a couple minutes ago about looking at the forums and seeing the reactions and then trying to work with it, maybe that's one of the reasons why they put so much of a hit on happiness in this patch, because they've come to the realization that no matter what they do, somebody's not going to be happy. So they're just trying to make it a little bit more realistic.
Oh, geez. Are we going to get into a realism argument here?
No. I was just commenting on the fact that no matter what they do, somebody's not going to be happy.
Oh, I know. And the thing is, you try to please everybody.
That's true.
Please nobody, too. So, yeah.
So in that respect, to figure, hey, these high numbers for happiness are very fantasy. Let's bring them down to a more realistic level. I'm kind of wondering if they have, do they actually have people betaing this that's not actually in the development team? Do they have people that are testing out these patches up?
Yeah, they do. I haven't been active in that, I'm afraid. Yeah. But I know that there are still people doing that.
Because, I mean, I think one of the problems that they had, or they seem to have, is when they released the game, is they were pushing and pushing and pushing and saying, oh, yeah, this is great, this is great, this is so much better than before. And yet, and I'm not saying it's their fault, I'm saying what it is that they were so much into it that they saw no faults in it. And when it came out and hit, and everybody like says, well, what the hell is this? I'm sorry, am I about to say that? what the heck is this? What were they thinking when they did this or that? It's kind of, they're kind of being slapped in the face by it, but realizing that, hey, they've been, that's my concern is that there's no outside, they need to have more outside influence that are seeing it and seeing how these things are affecting it and giving them a fresh perspective from, and like I say, unjustifiably biased perspective.
I find that hard to believe, personally.
What's that?
I can't go into too much detail, but it's not, I think they knew what they were doing when they released the game in the state it was in. And you just had so many core features that don't work, even now. There's a limit to bias, is I guess what I'm getting at. When you have a feature that doesn't work multiplayer, or you have features that are really clunky and take 3 times the amount of actions to do the same thing as the previous game's user interface, or, you know, severe balance issues where within a couple days of release, players are running amok with, you know, massive surplus happiness and, you know, beating the game on deity like it's nothing. That is what it is. There's no way the designers of the game were not aware of these things. It seems like it was a rushed game, and it's still paying the consequences for that. These are the kinds of things that you would expect in beta, not in a release patch, which is why I was joking that the game was still in beta when it was released, and essentially it was, if you're looking at the patch changes now. This is the kind of stuff that you just don't normally see in a post-release game.
To me, I think they should have, even though I think it's more common with massive multiplayer games, I think they should have had an open beta test for the game. I think they just had a closed beta, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so they should have had at least an open beta for a time period before the release so that they can get that outside perspective. Because, I mean, whether it's rushed it or they truly had rose-colored glasses when they were going through it saying, oh, this is so great. I mean, either way, I think that outside perspective would have said, hey, look, you got to get this right before you release it to everybody because you're going to be under a firestorm if you release it as it is. I mean, that's just my point of view. I mean, I'm not an expert or anything.
Well, let me point to an example from StarCraft II again. I really should stop using them as an example. But when they went open beta, they were much closer to their end release product, and they were much closer to how they are now than Civ 5 at any point that I've been aware. These kind of changes are something that would happen, you know, at or maybe around the start of an open beta. This is not, I guess the game was released so early, in my opinion, that we're looking at changes that probably should have happened before the open beta in some cases. It's just, you nearly need, when you have a strategy game like this, you need to have some concept of the trade-offs, the general game design, all that. Some of this stuff should really have been thought out, at least to a degree, before the graphics engine or anything was designed. And yet we're still seeing the changes now, and they're not just balance changes, but major overhauls to the game. Now, don't get me wrong, in looking at this, for most of these changes, I'm thinking better late than never. And it does give me hope that they're still working on the game, as if it is unfinished. Yeah, because it is unfinished. It gives me hope that they're treating it that way, and that they're still trying to make it into a good game, and the game it could potentially be. But certainly, it feels like we have been playing a beta experience when you look at changes like this.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that. I mean,
so it is an open beta. You just have to buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Cringing just a little bit when I look at some of these changes as well as some analyses. When it comes to earlier on in the game, not necessarily an earlier war to the point of destroying a civilization, speaking specifically here to the AI, that we still have in Civ 5, the runaway AI issue. And when we look at all of these changes, especially when you get on the higher difficulty levels, are they going to be experiencing, you know, obviously to some degree they're going to be getting some benefits against the human player or over the human player as you move up in difficulty levels. But I wonder, you know, just how much you know, these changes for good and bad are going to affect the AI comparably to the human player, if you catch my meaning. And again, that those are questions that are very difficult to answer right now abstractly because we don't have the patch in front of us.
Yeah.
And yeah, that concerns me too. Firaxis is notoriously bad for balancing the difficulty scaling for changes into the gameplay mechanics. And that really reared its head sometimes in the earlier Civ games, especially with things like the vassal state mechanic in Civ 4. It's just ridiculous, the kinds of things that could happen just by sheer luck. And most of the time, you could overcome it anyway, but man, could it get bad. And I do have some concerns about the changes to the AI, but I think ideally, if all the AIs expand decently, that will cut into the runaway AI problem. Because so often, and I say this from experience, in both Civ 4 and Civ 5, what makes a runaway AI is when the AI spawn in such a way that one can get tremendous amounts of land, and then you have a compounding factor where not only does one AI have a favorable spawn, but the AI or AIs near it choose not to expand quickly, and so you have one Civ with, you know, 15, 20 cities, and another Civ with 5 or less, ultimately, before a war is even fought. And if you start stacking a war from the 15 to 20 city AI on top of that, they will conquer everybody because they have 4 times the production if they have 20 cities. And then you have your runaway AI. And I don't see how you win games like that. And it's kind of crappy because there's really not a whole lot the player can do to influence that unless the player is on that same continent. Funds have always been an issue, but hopefully the AI all attempting to expand, if that implication in this patch notes is accurate. Like I said, I've been burned too many times by Firaxis patches in the past to really believe that when I see it. But hopefully if they expand decently as a rule, then this is going to be less of an issue where you're going to have really easy or really hard games just based on a crapshoot of how the AI decides to try or not try.
I think one of my favorite comments, maybe just to try to tie this all back in, perhaps close, is self-biased in the thread on a poll and said, quote, "That appears to be some rather sweeping changes," unquote. Oh, really?
No, we hadn't noticed.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Well, I think perhaps that brings us to the end of another fine Polycast episode. You can define fine on your own. And, wait.
Not coarse.
So we got to pay fines? I didn't know about that before.
You appeared on Polycast, you have to pay a fine. I don't exactly... I don't really want to put it that way. don't do that again.
So this has been Polycast number 122. We have been joined today by our guest co-host, Sal.
Thank you. Good night.
The me and team.
I'll put my great artist on your border and you will like it.
Makalua.
Well, at least he didn't say he was going to build a landmark on your border and you would like it.
Dan Quick.
1, 2, 3, 4, I declare more talking than playing of Civ 5 than before.
And myself. Nothing clever to say here.
And I think we should also note here that Lisa is going to be leaving us for a little while.
No.
She's on a secret mission to help Polycast take over the world.
Yep.
No, it's not a secret anymore.
She's on her own mission to take over the world. It has nothing to do with Polycast.
Oh, well, you know, it's just an added side effect.
So that's what you meant when you said you were going for domination and it didn't look like you were in
game. Yeah, I'm actually going on Wild Pile Island.
Oh, jeez. You'll get a fraction of a percentage closer.
But we're going to be having some VIPs come in and help take Lisa's spot while she is gone. But again, I thought we would acknowledge that. Wish you well, and remember to bring back souvenirs. Okay?
All right. All right. Imaginary cookies for everyone.
Yes.
Better watch out. They're going to be all the way from England. Oh, yeah, biscuits, not cookies. Biscuits.
Yeah.
Right. Be sure to take the lift sometimes rather than the stairs if you're tired.
Record day June 25th, 2011. Civilization 4, 5, and World Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.